banking and international financial law, international finance markets. We want to understand the structure, nature and operation of the international financial system and the core markets that operate within that. I've provided a core set of slides which reviews all of the key points concerned. What are we going to be looking at? Introduction, contract structures and finance options, relevant terms and conditions, related legal issues. We'll then look at the markets specifically. We'll look at historical development, main markets and the main definitions. In terms of historical development, I've provided separate material and presentations on the system covering the City of London, the London coffee houses, which began in the 1600s, 1650s, the financial markets themselves, the more recent euro-dollar markets which emerged after the Second World War, and the Bretton Woods system. We will then look at the core contracts. What are we concerned with? The euro loans, euro bonds, euro notes, commercial paper, and financial derivatives. Loans are bilateral debt instruments entered into by one bank, and usually because these markets are so large and the amounts involved are so significant, a group of banks. You will have a group or a syndicate of banks lending usually to one borrower and a group of associated borrowers as well. Very often it's a parent company and then a series of subsidiary borrowers. So you'll have a group of banks lending to a group of borrowers. That's a direct debt relationship, evidence constituted by the loan agreement with all the terms and conditions set out in the loan agreement. One document can then provide maximum flexibility because you can incorporate maximum number of options and facilities within one single document. Euro bonds are securities based. The debt is actually constituted in the form of a transferable security, which is transferable, it can move, but also it's negotiable in the sense that it can pass perfect title. So it's both transferable and negotiable. Euro loans tended to be for longer durations, 10, 20 years. They initially had fixed duration, but later we move on to floating rates. Fixed duration with a fixed interest period, and then later floating. The loans themselves tend now to be always denominated in a floating rate, so the bank's profit is basically going to be its cost of borrowing, which will be its the fees, the amount it has to pay for drawing down the funds on the interbank markets, plus its margin. Its margin is its profit. Most of this is expressed in terms of what we call basis points, BPS, which is parts of a percentage, so 0.001 or 1%. So 50 basis points, 20, 30 basis points, 40 basis points. If the bank rate, the interbank rate is, for example, 60 basis points, the banks will then want a profit, a margin on top of that. For example, 1% is 100 basis points, or 150 or 200. So you add that onto the top of the borrowing costs. That's what the borrower pays. In the bond market, again, a lot of this began with fixed interest rates to begin with. But from the beginning of the 1970s onwards, after the collapse of the Bretton Woods fixed exchange rate system, we moved on to floating rates with floating rate notes. A note legally is an instrument that pays variable interest. A bond is an instrument that pays fixed interest. What tends to happen in practice, we tend to consider this, discuss this in terms, classify this in terms of the chronology, in terms of the dates, the duration, rather than the interest itself. So we tend to talk about bonds being longer, maybe 15, 20 year plus, notes 1 to 20 years, and then anything less than 1 year we call commercial paper. You've also got financial derivatives, principally futures, options and swaps. The price of these is tied to an underlying asset of some form. These again emerged following the collapse of the Bretton Woods system during the early 1970s. Basically to create cover instruments for all of the massive amounts of new interest rate and foreign currency risk that was created. The markets then extended, developed very substantially subsequently. You can now cover almost any type of risk whatsoever using some form of financial derivative, and we'll come back and look at all of this in further detail. What are we concerned with? Term loans, syndication, and then euro bonds. These are all the core instruments and sets of legal issues that we need to understand to review how all of this operates in practice. Term loans, we have a term loan agreement. An agreement essentially based on three core sets of provisions: the financial provisions, the conditions, and the events of default. The conditions are basically conditions precedent, the representations and warranties, and the covenants. So the CPs, the reps and Ws, and the covs. The conditions precedent are, strictly speaking, pre-loan, reps and Ws, pre-advance and post-advance. In practice, what tends to happen is the reps and Ws tend to be pre-loan, the CPs are pre-advance, and then the covenants post-advance. A number of these will apply on an evergreen basis. A number of these are also repeaters, which means they're repeated at certain intervals, usually on every drawdown. Key point to highlight, key point to stress, is that although we'll have one loan agreement, we will have a massive, very large amount number of loans entered into under that loan agreement. That each loan is technically constituted by an individual separate drawdown by each of the borrowers against each of the banks. Legally, because of all the obligations are joint and several, and we will see that specifically in further detail when we look at the specific terms and conditions of the standard documentation involved. Legally, each loan by each borrower against each bank and member of the banking syndicate is a separate loan, and then each new loan is constituted every time there's a further drawdown. So, for example, you may have one borrower, nine subsidiaries, which is 10, 10 banks in a syndicate, that's 100. You will have minimum 100 loans. But then you'll have a term loan facility, and then you'll have a revolving facility, which is draw down and repay back. So you'll have that doubled. So 200 minimum. But what will then happen is under the term A, you'll have a commitment period so that you can draw down in specific intervals at the beginning of each interest period during the commitment period, which means that could be 1 year, 2 years. So another times that by 12 or by 24. So already we're looking at possibly 2,400 separate instruments. If the revolver is then drawable, you can draw down on the revolving facility every month, either for the first 2 years, that's the same, another 2,400, or possibly up to 10 or 20 years, that could be 24,000. So if we then add 2,400 and 24,000, we get possibly up to 26,4400 loans constituted by a single loan agreement. And the genius of this is that while each of these are separate legal obligations, they're governed by an identical single set of terms and conditions constituted by the loan agreement that's entered into. There are some further complications because there will be a limit on the total number of loans set out in the documents, and then you can also have divisibility and consolidation rights to divide and merge loans as well. We'll come back and look at all of this. So we need to understand the core financials, the core conditions, and the core events of default. Syndication, we need to also consider the relationship between the banks and the banking group. Each member is acting as principal, the liability is joint and several rather than joint and several. No bank is responsible for the commitments and obligations of any other bank. And again, all of this is expressed in the documentation that we will look at. The euro bond market is then economically identical because we can borrow the same amounts of money for the same period. All that tends to happen is if you can use and rely on the capital markets, you can borrow more at a finer rate, a finer coupon rate, which means it will be cheaper. The reason for that is because of the additional transferability in these markets. There's more liquidity in the markets, so very often you can borrow more. When we consider the Eurobond markets, we need to specifically look at the parties, the managers, the trustee, bondholders' meetings. We'll also consider other issues, including negotiability, listing, and depositories and custody. There are a series of other core markets and sets of facilities in the international finance system. We have project finance, which is basically infrastructure construction. If you want to build a power station, a harbour system, a hotel, a hospital, the easiest way to do it is through project finance. You don't technically have to borrow anything. everything is repaid by the income stream generated by the project constructed. Securitization is when we transfer assets from the banking market into the capital markets. Usually, we will use some form of special purpose vehicle, an SPV, usually in an offshore financial center, to keep this tax neutral so that you don't have additional tax charges while you're setting the transaction up and you're operating and running the facilities. We will then sell pools of standard common assets governed by identical terms, which creates a single economic asset class, a pool of assets. We will sell that to the SPV by an originating bank. It could be any type of asset pool. It might be residential mortgages, it could be corporate loans, it could be student loans, it could be finance contracts, for example, for televisions or aeroplanes or shipping. Anything which is bank or credit based can be securitized if we can hold it together in a single pool. The pool is sold by the originating bank to the SPV. The SPV pays for this pool by issuing new notes into the market, usually medium-term notes, 5, 10 or 15-year notes. It then acquires sufficient funds to pay for the asset pool to the originating bank that converts the underlying banking assets into capital market instruments. A series of special rules also apply with regards to state loans. We can also have secured lending, and then we have the financial derivatives markets we've already mentioned. We'll come back and look at all of this in further detail. In terms of other special issues, we will look at the residual nature of financial regulation, although most of these markets have to operate on a self-regulatory, a market control based mechanism, simply because these markets are so large, there is no single agency, either a government agency or an international organization, that is large enough to control these markets. The markets control themselves simply due to their inherent size. Most of the largest companies in the world and countries in the world will actually borrow in these markets. There is no agency bigger than those collectively that could regulate these markets. How do they regulate? How do they control themselves? They do on a self-regulatory market-based mechanism. In practice, this is dealt with through the main trade associations. The three core trade associations are the Loan Market Association, the International Capital Markets Association, formerly the International Primary Markets Association, and the International Secondary Markets Association, and then thirdly, the International Swaps and Derivatives Association. There's a series of other associations, and I'll provide links and materials on those as well. We also need to consider the issue of asset transfer. Asset transfer is basically moving loan instruments. Technically, legally, a loan instrument is a personal debt obligation. Historically, this could not be transferred. Now we can, through various forms of legal assignment or equitable assignment. So we need to look at the conditions that apply for legal assignment, equitable assignment, as well as participation, sub-participation. You can also technically transfer not legal interest, but economic interest through other forms of, for example, agency, securitization, or trust. These are often referred to as forms of transfer, but technically they involve economic conversion of interest rather than actual legal transfer as such. We'll come back and look at all of this. We also need to consider in this area legal opinions, financial remedies, and private international law to the extent relevant. There are some underlying regulatory provisions that we will consider. There's various sets of financial rules, conduct rules, and market rules. To a significant extent, the markets themselves directly are unregulated, although the largest parties in these markets, which are the biggest commercial banks in the world and investment firms in the world, they will be separately regulated at the domestic level. So while we do not have direct regulation of the markets themselves, we'll have indirect control and regulation of the institutions. And as part of any assessment and oversight of their functions by domestic agencies, the regulators will consider to what extent they have exposures in these other international markets. So you will have direct implications which will apply with regards to preserving their financial condition, their capital and liquidity management, as well as conduct rules, as well as market rules. The market rules specifically apply where the firms are dealing on specific stock markets and exchanges. And again, I'll provide separate material on all of this. When we are considering this issue of larger market control and market regulation, because it applies to all the countries in the world, because it applies to the whole of the world, strictly speaking, we would need some form of international treaty or some form of international convention. The difficulty, however, is it's very difficult to agree such types of provisions in the financial area. Financial markets and financial control, including monetary policy, are very closely associated to ideas of sovereign autonomy, sovereign authority, sovereign identity. So countries are very reluctant to surrender their ability to control in this area. So it's politically, operationally, and financially difficult or ineffective to try and consider some form of formal treaty or convention-based model in this area. That's why we have to look at a self-regulatory system. If it was formal treaty-based, that would be very costly, it would be expensive, there would be a lot of formality, a lot of delay. It raises very difficult, politically sensitive issues, so it's difficult to agree. What will then happen is it will only have partial effect, it will be incomplete, and it will be uneven. Certain countries will always, because this always happens at the international level, insist on various forms of national variation or adjustment or derogation. So you'll then get inconsistency, incoherence and conflict. We also have a larger lack of effective international oversight. And even if we had international oversight, lack of an effective enforcement mechanism. So a formal treaty-based solution would not operate in these areas. What's the alternative? Some form of market, wholesale market self regulatory model. This reflects market practice, improved risk management, we can use standard documentation, it supports industry representation, and then through public understanding, communication and disclosure, we can ensure that everybody, all participants, understand the nature and operation of these markets and of this control system. We can justify this on the basis of being expert and relevant. It's market professionally designed and structured. It's immediate and integral. It incorporates private law contracts from the basis of the control mechanism rather than separate external regulatory conditions. It's flexible and responsive. It can be subject to continuous revision and review as market changes and circumstances adjust. Cost and ease of revision, cost and ease of implementation, and voluntary adoption and compliance, which also supports commitment, engagement, and overall effectiveness. There are some inherent limitations, possible conflicts of interest, possible lack of transparency, possible arguments around this being anti-competitive, possible arguments that there's no public interest, possible absence of larger systemic control, although in practice all of these can be dealt with anyway, certainly because of the main authorities, and in particular the central banks, in association with the domestic regulatory authorities, will be monitoring how financial markets operate and develop over time as well. There's a number of other more specific detailed points we could build in around that. So, for example, this idea of having trade associations and a domestic private law model. We could also justify this on the basis of it being clear, it's consistent, it's complete and comprehensive, it's certain, we have full cover and we can adjust the cover scope of application as necessary. It's convenient, which means flexible, it's subject to correction, which means it's adaptable. We promote commitment and compliance through voluntary adoption and adherence. All of this promotes longer term convergence. It's also closely compatible because it can reflect market practice at any point of time. And the effect of all of these points is that it allows high degrees of internal control and stable, effective operation without the need for formal external oversight. The unique nature of this, however, is dependent upon the specific characteristics and conditions of the market itself. And so we can also consider the particular attributes or nature of this market, which allows this model to work. The market is very compact in size. It's very small in size, but transaction size is very large. It's a highly concentrated market. All of the parties engaged in this are professional or wholesale counterparties. All of them are acting as principal and benefit from continuous legal advice from the largest law firms in the world. This allows massive engagement and self-interest, which supports voluntary adoption and compliance. All of this is further driven by a continuing profit incentive, simply because the markets are so large, everybody has this natural engagement and self-interest involvement in the need to protect the stable, effective operation of the markets on a continuing basis. These markets are also cross-border and global in nature. While they are self-regulatory, there is still official oversight, in particular by the domestic authorities and the domestic central banks. There will be some residual sanction, and there will be some central bank oversight or lender of last resort available in emergency situations as well. Through this unique set of conditions and this unique set of attributes, we can understand how this market self-regulatory model is appropriate and suitable and does work as effectively as it does in the international wholesale market area. The rest of the slides simply outline the key trade associations. So we have the Loan Market Association, LME, which governs the loan and syndicated lending area. I've simply summarized establishment, purpose, structure, board and governance, its specific committees, and highlighted the key point on the core documentation that's produced. We also, in the capital markets area, have the International Capital Markets Association, which arose from a merger of the International Secondary Markets Association and the International Primary Markets Association in 2005. Again, I've summarized its origin, establishment and development from the Association of International Brokers and Dealers. I've listed its purpose, governance committees, documentation, and then highlighted the importance of its handbooks. And then, again, we can refer to the International Swaps and Derivatives Association. It specifically operates through a series of master agreements, confirmations, definitions, opinions, and the use of amendment protocols and adherence letters. And I expand and develop all of this in the papers provided. This is a highly effective market model. These are the largest financial markets in the world. However, we can still operate these on a stable and effective basis through this market regulatory model, which is ultimately based on private law, private rights and obligations. We can protect all of the rights and interests of all of the parties through the agreement and entering into of standard documentation on standard terms, as agreed, consolidated and developed by the largest law firms in the world. This then means that we have an alternative private contract-based model as a proxy or alternative to formal external regulation. This has always worked very effectively, even with the pressures created through the global financial crisis and other disruptions with the, for example, coronavirus crisis and other geopolitical events. These markets have managed to survive and thrive simply because of the effectiveness of the inherent model itself and the ability of law and well-drafted private contract documentation to manage and control all of the private party rights and obligations involved.